It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 286. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to break down this rather depressing series against the Milwaukee Brewers. Dan Zimborski from Fangraphs.com is going to join me to talk about where the Phillies stand now that we are about a quarter of the way here through the 2019 season. We'll take a look at the offense, we'll take a look at the starting rotation, and just take a quick look around Major League Baseball as well. We're going to get into some of the good hitters around Major League Baseball having some very bad seasons and some unexpected players having very, very good seasons. We'll preview the upcoming series against the Colorado Rockies at home. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But a reminder, gang, for those of you who already are subscribing to the Good Fight podcast feed, you get Hittin' Season, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning. Don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts when you get a second, if you haven't done so already. That really does help the podcast grow, helps other Phillies fans find us as well. If you also wouldn't mind checking out the Hittin' Season Patreon, you can get some good bonus content there. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season. You can get some video content and some written content by me there. Also, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher have some bonus content there for all of our $5 a month Patreon subscribers as a thank you for being subscribers, Patreon members to Hittin' Season. Again, it's at patreon.com/hittin'season. And again, don't forget to check out thegoodfight.com each and every day for the very latest Phillies news and information, recaps, game threads, to be a part of the Phillies community at SB Nation. Don't forget to check out thegoodfight.com, PHIGHT, every single day. Let's get into this series against the Brewers, and I'm trying to put forth a brave face here, everybody. That's why I don't like to come onto the show with a gloomy voice and hanging my head when the Phillies were clearly outplayed by a better baseball team this week. We all knew the Phillies had a rough stretch in front of them. 20 games in 21 days against some extremely good baseball teams. The Brewers, the Rockies, the Cubs, the Cardinals, and the Dodgers. This was going to be a gauntlet. But at the same time, a litmus test to measure where the Phillies are compared to some of these other very good teams. Let's not forget, the Milwaukee Brewers were one game away from the World Series last year. They played the Los Angeles Dodgers tooth and nail in the NLCS and almost won Game 7. Came within a whisker of winning Game 7. But in the end, the Dodgers ended up going to the World Series and obviously faltering once they got there, of course. But the Milwaukee Brewers are a very good baseball team. And that's what we saw this week at Citizens Bank Park. We saw the Phillies still have a little ways to go before they can say that they are in the Brewers' class. Losing 3 out of 4, winning the first game of the series, but losing the last 3 in a row. And they really were not competitive in the last 3 games, losing by a combined score of 22-6. I know the scores on Tuesday and Wednesday weren't blowouts, but the Phillies just didn't have much of a pulse in this series. They are still 24-19 on the season. They still are in first place as we are recording this. The Braves were winning pretty handily in their game here on Thursday night as I'm recording this, which would make their lead in the National League East down to 1.5 games. Still in first place here, a quarter of the way through the 2019 season. In the 14 series that they've played this year, they've won 8 of them, lost 4 of them, and split 2 of them. We still have not seen a significant winning streak from the Phillies yet this year. Their longest streak of the year was 4, and that was the first 4 games of the season. Since then, they've only gone 20-9. One game over 500. They've basically been a 500 team since that season opening four game winning streak, but those 4 games still count, which is why the Phillies sit 5 games over 500 here as we record this podcast, exiting the Milwaukee series and heading into the Colorado series. But that's the one thing I really took away from this series is the Phillies aren't quite at Milwaukee's level yet. Milwaukee has a terrific lineup. They have a lineup that just doesn't stop, and I can't really falter Phillies pitching in this series. It wasn't good, It wasn't good. Aaron Nola did not pitch well in the series opener on Monday. Jared Eichhoff had his first bad start of the season on Tuesday. Jake Arrieta was all over the place and was not helped by his defense on Wednesday. And, of course, on Thursday, Zach Eflin, I think, did a decent job of trying to limit the damage. But the Brewers' offense just comes at you in waves. And they right now have better players in that lineup than the Phillies do. Christian Yelich is light years better than anything the Phillies have right now. I mean, he is just unbelievable what he's doing right now. And he hadn't been hitting that well on the road. Most of the damage that he had been doing this year was at home. Well, he certainly made Citizens Bank Park look like it was a home ballpark. And we all know what Ryan Braun does at Citizens Bank Park. He is the best opposition hitter to ever play at Citizens Bank Park. Ryan Braun, check this out. These numbers are insane. 63 hits in 38 career games. 63. That's almost two hits a game on average for Ryan Braun, batting .420 in his career at Citizens Bank Park. In this series alone, went 7-for-13 with a home run, 4 RBIs, 6 runs scored. He reached base in 10 out of the 16 plate appearances he had in this series. I mean, it is a good thing we only see him once a year, because he is unbelievable at Citizens Bank Park. It's crazy. And Christian Yelich is just a machine. I did not see this coming with Christian Yelich. During the offseason of 2017, leading into 2018, we had conversations about whether or not the Phillies should give up the farm for Christian Yelich. And part of the argument against doing that was that he didn't hit for power. He'd only hit like 9 or 10 home runs the season before. He hit mostly ground balls. He was not a power guy. And even playing in Miami, even playing in Marlins Park, he didn't hit a lot of home runs on the road. I mean, he just didn't look like a guy who was going to develop the kind of power that he's shown now. His numbers mirrored Odubel Herrera's in Herrera's first 3 seasons. That's who Christian Yelich was at the plate. He was essentially Odubel Herrera. Well, last year, of course, he won the MVP, and this year he's hitting .342, .458. He's slugging .760 this season. He has 18 home runs. He has 40 RBIs. So this Brewers team is really good. They have Mike Moustakas. I mean, a lot of these guys were not hitting well coming into Citizens Bank Park this week, but the Phillies made them look pretty damn good. Lorenzo Cain got on track with a 5-hit game in the series opener in the loss, Milwaukee's lone loss of the series. Moustakas had a couple of big home runs. Yasmani Grandal looked reborn this week in Philadelphia. Everybody was. Jesus Aguilar even had a couple of big hits in this series. You could not figure out a way. It seemed like the Phillies were doing everything they could to hold the Milwaukee offense back the entire series, and every run the Phillies tried to get was dinked and dunked and dribbed and drabbed, with the exception of a couple of Gene Segura home runs. Most of the runs the Phillies got this week were gifts, were because of miscues by Milwaukee's defense, errors. The two-run outburst, quote-unquote, in the game here on Thursday was due entirely to a botched double play ball off the bat of Bryce Harper. That's how the Phillies were scoring this week. They really were given runs by Milwaukee. And speaking of giving runs away, that is something the Phillies were doing at just constantly in this series, and it drove me bonkers. You cannot do that with a team as good as the Brewers. You cannot give free passes, and you absolutely cannot commit errors on defense, physical or mental. They didn't rack up a lot of errors in the scorebook, but the amount of mental miscues in this series, Cesar Hernandez had a couple. Sean Rodriguez, of course, had the little league-like blunder at third base where, with the bases loaded and nobody out, a grounder is hit right to him, and Gio Gonzalez makes the mistake of going back to the third base bag. Sean Rodriguez didn't know what to do. And my 8-year-old son plays in a little league for 6 to 8-year-olds. And he looked like some of the kids out there who, when they get the ball, just don't know what to do with it. Spinning around, running around, Gene Segura finally had to yell at him to throw the ball home to at least get a force out at home and get one out. And then the Brewers ended up scoring a bunch of runs that inning. one of the reasons that they lost the third game of the series on Wednesday. Too many given outs to a dangerous lineup, and too many free passes. I know the defense let Jake Arrieta down in his start on Wednesday, but that inning started, that Sean Rodriguez inning started with him walking the pitcher, Gio Gonzalez, as the leadoff hitter, and then walking the next batter, putting the first two runners on base with walks. Now, he got what should have been a double play ball, but Cesar Hernandez botched that. And instead of getting one out someplace, he got no outs because he double-clutched to throw to second, then tried to throw to first in a hurry, and Rhys Hoskins was late getting to the bag. And then on the next play, you had the Sean Rodriguez play. Now, that did Jake Arrieta in, but in part it was due to the walks. And he walked four guys and hit a batter in that inning. That's not a $25 million a year pitcher. His ERA's up over four now. But as we look at this series, you can look at all of the mistakes that the Phillies made, and you can look at the fact that Phillies pitching had trouble getting Brewers hitters out. That's just going to happen. Milwaukee's a damn good offense. There's a reason they went to Game 7 of the National League Championship Series last year. To me, the most disappointing part about this series continues to be the offense. Where is it? Where is the consistency with this offense? Especially against a Brewers starting rotation that is probably the worst of all the National League postseason contenders. Their starting rotation is laughable. They came into this series with a 4.58 ERA as a rotation. The Brewers did, 22nd in Major League Baseball. They exited the series with a 4.27 ERA, 0.3 of a run. The Brewers starting rotation knocked off their ERA. They moved from 22nd in baseball to 14th in baseball. Because of the Phillies offense alone, they went from being a team in the bottom third of Major League Baseball to being in the top half. Okay, and that just tells you how little of the season we've played, that four games can move a starting rotation that far in the rankings. Nevertheless, this offense is struggling. Coming into the game on Thursday, over the last 14 days, Andrew McCutchen was hitting 186, 300, 186 with a weighted runs created of 44. League average for a weighted runs created is 100, by the way. So if you have like a 120 weighted runs created, that means you're about 20% better than the league average as far as being a run producer is concerned. It's a pretty good stat. It's a pretty handy stat, easy to read. If you see a player over 100, that means they're above league average. If you see a player under 100, that means they're below league average, and 44 is way below league average. And until he hit a double down the left field line in the game on Thursday, Andrew McCutchen had not had an extra base hit in the entire month of May. We haven't talked about McCutchen's struggles because he started off the season hot. Same with Maikel Franco. Over the last 14 days, 195, 250, 244 coming into the game on Thursday, and he didn't do anything to help himself in the game on Thursday. Weighted runs created of 25 for Maikel Franco. He's still getting a pass because he started off the season so hot. He has regressed back to the player, to the hitter that he has been the last few seasons. You're not getting that production from the best eight-hole hitter in baseball. He hasn't been that guy over the last few weeks. And again, we're just looking at a couple of weeks. It's a small sample size, and you can say that for pretty much all of the statistics I'm about to read to you here. But this is what we have. This is what has happened over the last couple of weeks. Nick Williams hitting 227 in every slash line category right now with a weighted runs created of 19 over the last 14 days. Odubel Herrera, 222, 263, 417, a weighted runs created of 77. Bryce Harper, 190, 346, 333 over the last 14 days, weighted runs created of 93. JT Realmuto, who, if you look at his last 7 days, Realmuto is a hot hitter. Over the last 14 days, not so much. 244 average, 289 on base, 341, but he's been hot over the last week. Realmuto, 292, 346, 417 over the last 7 days. Only two Phillies have a weighted runs created over 100 over the last 14 days. Cesar Hernandez, who again is red hot at the plate but making a bunch of mistakes on the base paths and in the field. And Rhys Hoskins at 140, but Hoskins over the last 7 days has hit the skids. To the day that I published a piece for The Good Fight praising Rhys Hoskins for his consistency and his ability to hit breaking pitches. In the 7 days since I wrote that piece, he's hitting 182, 308, 182, and I would just like to apologize to the American people. It's my fault. I didn't know what I was doing. Gene Segura continues to hit. Cesar Hernandez continues to hit. And right now, JT Realmuto is hitting a little bit. Realmuto only has 4 home runs on the season, though. I thought we were looking at a 25 to 30 home run guy, and maybe he'll get hot and do that. But clearly 4 home runs through the middle of May is not what we were expecting from JT Realmuto. But he is hitting for a decent average. He's getting on base a decent amount. He's been the team's best hitter with runners in scoring position. He's providing excellent leadership with the starting rotation, and I'm sure with the rest of the players in the locker room. He's always been known as a team leader type guy, and his defense behind the dish has been outstanding, throwing out more than 60% of base runners this year, I think it was my last time I checked. Outstanding. So he's providing some value in other ways. And Gene Segura has just been the hit machine. And I think that this team can take a lesson from Gene Segura. What we have seen from the Phillies this year is remarkably similar to what we saw last year. Low batting average, decent on-base percentage to above average on-base percentage, low slugging percentage. We are in a league right now where you live and die by the home run. And if you're not going to live and die by the home run, then you better have high batting average. You better have athletic players who are going to steal bases. The Phillies are dead last in the league in stolen bases and stolen base attempts. They don't believe in trying for stolen bases. And they don't have the personnel to do that anyway. That's not who this team is. They have been doing better going first to third on things and second to home on singles, but they're not going to steal bags. But if you're not going to do that stuff, if you're not going to have a bunch of 280 to 320 hitters in your lineup, you got to hit home runs. And they're just not doing that. And we're seeing the same things as last year. They're too passive in situations where they need to be more aggressive. Andrew McCutchen has stranded... I got to find the number on this because it was mentioned by Corey Seidman on the At the Yard podcast that NBC Sports Philadelphia does. And it really is astonishing. Heading into the game on Wednesday, so this stat is a couple of days old, McCutchen had stranded 67 of the 76 runners on base during his plate appearances, and it's all about approach. He's very good at working deep counts, and he's among the league leaders in walks, but when you've got runners on first and second and one out, looking for the walk in that situation is not the right call there. If they walk you, fine. You take the walk. And if you happen to get yourself into a two-strike count or a full, that's fine. But there are times you've got to be more aggressive early in the count. And I think we're seeing that with there's a reason Gene Segura continues to hit. He's got a tremendous ability to put the bat on the ball and hit line drives. He's gifted that way. He's just got a gift for that. But this baseball team is not hitting home runs, and I think it's because they're just simply not aggressive enough in certain situations. Now, Gabe Kapler doesn't have any answers for this. Nobody seems to have any answers for this. We don't get to hear from the hitting coach. We don't hear from John Mailey. We don't hear from anybody else to know why they think these things are happening. And maybe it's all just happenstance. Maybe it's just a continued season-long slump. But the Phillies' offense, after being so good in the first week of the season, week and a half, 2 weeks of the season, has been terrible. They have absolutely been below par. Matt Gelb had this in his piece for The Athletic after the game. After they scored 14 runs against the Mets on April 16th, they were 10-6 on the season, and as a team, they were batting .257, .359, .459. Since that time, they've gone 14-13 and have hit .235, .310, .372 over their last 27 games, which is a full month's worth of games. On the season, they're hitting .244, .329, .405. Compare that to last year. The batting average last year at this time through 43 games was .242. It's .244 this year. Their on-base percentage was .328. It's .329 right now. Their slugging percentage was .403. It's .405 right now. It's the same exact numbers. Same exact numbers. And you have to wonder, is this coming from the pitching coach? I can't imagine that it is because this whole lineup has... It's transformed. You've got veterans on this team like McCutchen and Harper and Segura and Realmuto who are all new to the team. They're established major league players. I can't imagine that John Mailey is having some kind of huge influence. But I don't know what if a hitting coach can't diagnose what's going on here, I don't know what a hitting coach does. What does a hitting coach do? Nobody seems to know how to fix this kind of a thing. Gabe Kapler's solution on Thursday was to move Bryce Harper up to the number two spot in the lineup and move Gene Segura to number three. Didn't do anything. Bryce Harper didn't have any better of a game, and Gene Segura did exactly what he did when he was the number two hole hitter. Hit a home run, hit the ball hard everywhere. There just doesn't seem to be any answers right now, and it's depressing that it happened against a very vulnerable Milwaukee starting rotation. So the Phillies are just struggling offensively. It has been a disappointing offense. There's no other way to put it. This offense has been disappointing, and yet the team is still in first place. You would think the optimistic view is that when this team starts to hit, and I believe this team will start to hit, Bryce Harper will hit. JT Realmuto will hit for some power this year. I got to believe Andrew McCutchen is going to turn things around at some point this year. This team is going to hit. And when they do, that's when you're going to start to see a long winning streak. That's when you're going to start to see a couple of five-game winning streaks, maybe a six-game winning streak thrown in the mix here. Because I don't know that we can continue to count on the starting rotation to do what it's been doing. And as we've seen the bullpen has, you know, listen, I know the bullpen gave away the game on Thursday. It was a close game until Zach Eflin left, and then once the bullpen came in, they really just blew the game and made it a laugher. And I get being upset with the bullpen. Here's the thing to remember. The injuries are really starting to take their toll on this bullpen. Victor Arano not being there, Edubre Ramos not being there. For whatever you think of those guys, and Tommy Hunter, whatever you think of those guys, they were counted on to be a major part of this bullpen. And of course, not having David Robertson all season so far has really hurt. If you are getting the kind of David Robertson that we thought we were going to get, everybody moves down the line a little bit, and the bullpen is a lot more stable than it is right now. The Phillies say he could be back before the All-Star break, same and along with Tommy Hunter, which would be great. It would be great to get those guys back. I'm not the biggest Tommy Hunter fan in the world, but I would certainly welcome him at this point because Edgar Garcia and Austin Davis are not getting it done. Juan Nicasio is awful. And I don't know what the hell has happened to Sir Anthony Dominguez. And Sir Anthony Dominguez may be the most worrisome person in this entire bullpen. And our own Anthony Whitty from The Good Fight did a really good piece on this. Make sure you check it out at The Good Fight. Looking at some video from Sir Anthony, trying to figure out if he was tipping his pitches. It doesn't appear obvious that he is. His stuff is about 1 mile an hour slower across the board, but he's still throwing in the game on Thursday 98, 99 miles an hour. He's holding his hands slightly lower from the set position, as Ethan noted in the piece. But, you know, are all those things the reason? He got ahead of Grandal 0-2 and then missed his location horribly with a fastball. Realmuto wanted it low and outside. He threw it low and inside on the complete other side of the plate, and it was tattooed for a game-breaking three-run home run. And Sir Anthony Dominguez has been getting killed with home runs this year. I don't know what's happened to him because the stuff still looks somewhat decent, but I think it's kind of flat. The slider has flattened out a little bit, and the fastball has just not had quite the same velocity. So I would not be at all surprised at some point to see Sir Anthony Dominguez get sent down to AAA because I don't know what else there is to do. And Gabe Kapler said after the game that action steps have to come following a series like this. And you just wonder, what could that mean? Could that mean something like Sir Anthony Dominguez getting sent down to AAA? Could he be talking about the offense, giving Harper a day off? They said this week, you know, it was thought that when Harper slid into the right field wall, making a nice sliding catch this week, that maybe he gets a day off because it looked like he might have banged up his knee a little bit, and it would be a good excuse for him to get a rest and try and reset the batteries with his slump. And you know, it didn't happen. He stayed in the lineup on Wednesday and Thursday, and the slump continues. So does Harper maybe get a day off? Does Gabe Kapler just simply say, listen, bud, take a day off from baseball? All right, just sit and watch. You know, stop thinking about it so much. Get out of your own head. Does it mean other players get a day off? This bench is so thin right now. It's hard to give these guys a day off, especially with the kind of competition. They had to put Phil Gosselin in left field on Wednesday, which is not something you ever want to do, just to get Odubel Herrera a day off. now that they had to let Aaron Altherr go. And Aaron Altherr was no great shakes either. But that's the situation the Phillies are faced with. They really can't afford to take any of their starting eight out of the lineup because the bench is so weak. So do you have more lineup shifts? Do you have more shuffling? Do you have more guys, different guys at the top of the lineup? Do you move Andrew McCutchen down in the order and put Bryce Harper in the leadoff spot? He's done that before. Maybe you put Bryce in the leadoff spot. Put Reese at number two or something. I mean, maybe they're just going to try and figure out some different ways to utilize the lineup. Do you make adjustments to the bullpen? Do you bring back Nick Pivetta for the starting rotation? I'm not sure exactly where Nick Pivetta would fit in the starting rotation at this point, but he had another outstanding outing for AAA on Thursday. 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 4 walks, and 11 strikeouts on 99 pitches. Excellent outing from Nick Pivetta. So there doesn't seem to be any clear answers for what the Phillies should do here. It feels like they just kind of need to play their way out of it, and chances are they probably will, but it's not going to be an easy task over these next 16 games. This was a rough four-game series against the Milwaukee Brewers. It was a measuring stick game, and right now the Phillies have been found wanting. Can they bounce back against the Colorado Rockies team? We're gonna preview the Rockies series coming up here in just a few minutes. But up next, we're going to talk to Dan Zimborski, senior writer for Fangraphs. We're going to talk about this series against the Brewers and the Phillies here, one quarter of the way through the season. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. Well, we are at about a quarter of the way through the 2019 baseball season here, and the Philadelphia Phillies are in first place. You wouldn't know it based on the fan reaction following the series loss to the Milwaukee Brewers. But so far, so good, Phils fans, I think, just in general overall. And joining us to talk about where the Phillies stand here a quarter of the way into the season, we'll talk a little bit about the Brewers series as well. And a couple things around Major League Baseball is Dan Zimborski, senior writer for Fangraphs. You can follow him on Twitter at DZimborski. That's DSZYMBORSKI. And of course, you might also know Dan as the creator of the Zips projection formula. Dan, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you, man?
Oh, thanks for having me on, John. How's it going?
It's going great. Like I just mentioned a second ago, in Philadelphia, and I don't know if it's this way in other baseball markets, it's probably a Northeastern thing. Each game is like a football game. You know, we don't have the ability to take the long view of a 162-game baseball season. Every series loss, and the Phillies really haven't had many series losses this year, you start to hear the whispers of, should Gabe be fired? Do we need to fire the hitting coach or the pitching coach? I mean, this was not a good series this week for the Phillies, losing 3 out of 4 to Milwaukee, and they kind of got their doors blown off in the last three games. But overall so far this season, what do you make of the Phillies as we sit here about a quarter of the way through the season?
I mean, they are in first place, so you can't really complain about that. I actually predicted the Nationals to be in first place, which is looking much more unlikely than it did a month and a half ago. I think there's some sort of unwritten law that there's only so much complaining you can do when you're in first place, because other than that, the gods of baseball will smite you.
Yeah.
They haven't reached first place exactly the same way that was expected. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the team. I mean, Aaron Nola has been, you know, up and down. Let's just be generous.
Oh, yeah.
Bryce Harper hasn't really been, you know, the MVP type Bryce Harper they were wanting. They've gotten a lot of Reese Hoskins, which, of course, is good. They've gotten a lot of Cesar Hernandez. He's got a 378 on base percentage or so last I checked. Mm-hmm. And they've gotten some good pitching from pitchers that they weren't really expecting to take that much of a step up. So it's been just differently configured, and there's a lot of pitcher, especially relief injuries, but I don't think there's too much to complain that much about. And I might say that because, you know, I'm from Baltimore, and I'm just talking about the 2019 team, there's a lot to talk about that's worse.
Yeah, I think, and let's talk about Bryce Harper first, just to kind of get that out of the way, because he is the guy that everybody is talking about in Philadelphia. It has not gone well here so far. And by gone well, I just mean that it hasn't been, you know, after that first week and a half of the season when he lit the world on fire, he was the talk of baseball. It looked like he was going to get off to a red-hot start. He's really slumped badly, getting, you know, hitting the ball for average, hitting, you know, with a slugging percentage. It's not where we wanted it to be, but, you know, of course, the on-base percentage is really good. I think what's really freaking people out are the strikeouts and the way he's striking out on fastballs over the plate, and that's what I think is the most worrisome to Phillies fans. What do you see when you see Bryce Harper struggling at the plate right now? What are you taking out of his start to the season here?
You do see him not really crushing fastballs the way that he should, because you look at his best seasons. And they pretty much involved him just destroying fastballs. I mean, yeah. 2015, I think he led the league in the pitch value thing that Fangraphs keeps. I'd have to check that. I'm going from memory there. I think that in some way it's almost like he's a little too passive, but then aggressive when he doesn't need to be. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah.
It's like he's been fooled a little more with bad pitches this year than he normally has. Maybe he's trying to extend his strike zone in the wrong direction. But, you know, I still believe in him, and I still think he'll be fine. But, I mean, you'd like him to be hitting better than this. I mean, you can't even use batting average on balls in play as an excuse, because he's been right around 300 most of the season, I believe, and he was there last year as well, and which I mean, was an okay. It was a pretty good season. It was the second half where he really came on. Mm-hmm. It's tricky. I don't quite know. I'm not a batting coach, so I don't know how to turn him around. I'm not a hitting coach, but I still believe in him.
Well, it doesn't seem like the batting coach knows either, and this is not necessarily a criticism.
I said batting coach, didn't I? Nobody has ever said...
Yeah, no, it's the hitting coach, batting coach, who cares?
It's like one of those Apu things where he says the... You know, where he says local sports team and
the local sports
Mets
squadron.
Are my favorite squadron. I said the batting coach.
Well, we know that we know that you've got the vernacular down, so it's not a
usually problem. usually it's names.
Yeah.
Names, especially players that had parents that I remember. I have trouble with those names as I age. The worst is Cody Bellinger. I call him Clay a lot because his dad was Clay. And the thing is, nobody really remembers his dad as a player. His dad was, a utility guy for the Yankees and the Angels. But I call him Clay. The Romine brothers, I call them both Kevin at various times. That's why I like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's
hard
to get his name
wrong. Yeah, I was
going to
say, that's an easy one. Yeah. That's user-friendly, for sure.
I mean, I'm not going to call him Senior. That would be really, really weird.
Exactly. Well, what's funny here is that, you know, This is kind of the way the Phillies offense played itself out last year. Low batting averages, high on base percentages. The feeling I get watching this team is that they're very passive, which is a lot of times what you want when you've got a guy leading off an inning, but they see a lot of pitches. They make starting pitchers have their pitch counts go up so that they can get into the bullpens, which, you know, is still the what you want to do, even though bullpens are better now than they used to be. But I thought what was the most disappointing part of this series against the Brewers was that, and I mentioned this stat just a few minutes ago on the podcast, the Brewers starting rotation is not very good. It's one of the weakest among all the different potential National League playoff teams. They came into this series with a 4.58 ERA, which was 22nd in baseball. They leave Philadelphia, a hitter's ballpark, with a 4.27 ERA. That's 3/10 of an ERA drop, 3/10 of a point drop. They're now 14th in baseball in starters ERA. Against a good Phillies offense, or an offense that we thought was supposed to be good, felt like the Phillies offense kind of let them off the hook this series. And that's been it's been kind of a frustration, is this offense was supposed to carry the team, and it's been really inconsistent.
And it's possibly the type of team that the Brewers would do well against, because you look at the rotation, it's not full of guys really who, you know, throw 90 or 95
right.
or they throw in the 80s mostly. I mean, no one looks at Gio Gonzalez and says, man, he's Billy Wagner, but a starter. That's happened zero times ever.
Right.
But I think generally speaking that some of these pitchability guys, I hate that word, but but I think that sometimes they'll have success about a team who's over aggressive in the wrong way. Because it's nothing wrong with being aggressive. It's just there's a difference between good aggression and bad aggression.
No, that's true. And I think we've seen that from Andrew McCutchen a little bit, in that when he's leading off a game, he, again, tends to work a lot of three ball counts, works a lot of walks, but he's also stranded at an unbelievable amount of base runners when he's when he comes up in RBI situations this year. And that's just one of those things where, you know, at a certain point, and I think this is the thing that I see with the Phillies offense, is they need to be aggressive at certain situations. I think the pitchers around the league have kind of gotten a little bit of a book on this offense, that you can get to them early in counts, and it's harder to hit with two strikes. Even if you're a good, a patient hitter, you know, Rhys Hoskins is very good with two strikes, but it's hard to maintain that throughout an entire season. So, you know, we're kind of just waiting for this offense to break out. And when we kind of feel like when it does, this team will take off. When you're looking at some of the guys they got that they brought in from the offseason, Bryce Harper, Gene Segura, JT Realmuto, who would you say was the best addition so far? Again, understanding that it's still very, very early.
Yeah, well, just in 2019, I think Segura has been arguably, after Hoskins, the team's offensive MVP so far this year. I think he's shown. Yeah, I mean, he's aggressive at the plate, but he's good at being aggressive at the plate. When you can hit like he does when he's on, I mean, it's a big plus for the offense. And really, they haven't had a ton to look at. I mean, Realmuto isn't really where he wants to be. Harper, of course, isn't. Herrera, when healthy, has not been. McCutcheon's had his moments. I mean, he's still getting on base. Franco's kind of cooled off. But Segura's been pretty solid.
Yeah, home runs in back-to-back games for him. He's well over 300. He's been pretty consistent so far. All right, let's look at the Phillies rotation here real quick, Dan. And the two best, if you had told me before the start of the season that the two best starters would be Zach Eflin and Jared Eichhoff, and then you would tell me that the Phillies were in first place, I'd have to ask you to please step out of my room because you have obviously been inhaling something that I don't need to be inhaling. But with Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta basically looking like two of their worst starters so far this year, what do you make of this rotation?
Well, I really like what Eichhoff has done this year. He's keeping the ball in the park, which is pretty important when you're talking 2019 and home run rates going up again. Yeah. You know, juiced baseballs and all that. And Eflin, I mean, he's been solid. He's, you know, he's not an overpowering pitcher, I don't think, by any circumstance. But he works fast. He throws strikes, and that's kind of the old Johnny Sane methodology. And I think, of course, without them, I don't think the Phillies would be in first place right now. I do think that Nola will be fine. I mean, there are times, especially early on, I was a little worried about Nola. It seemed almost that he's a little predictable out there. I was trying. I wrote about him earlier this year. I couldn't find a good measurement of unpredictability that I could easily explain. But he's just not the same, and I love Aaron Nola. He was so good last year. I know my projections keep having him as one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball going forward. So it's kind of disappointing to see. I mean, I'm still a believer, and I'm not gonna go nuts about, you know, 6 weeks. Like, yeah, people sometimes will.
And it's been cold in a lot of his starts, and he's such a feel pitcher. I think that has been part of an issue. He's not been confident in his fastball, and his last start against Milwaukee just did not seem to have a lot of confidence in. He last year he would just get the ball and throw, and this year he's really labored a lot. It seems as though he's in his head a little bit here too, and that's surprising for me because he's been a guy who's always been able with the fastball to put it wherever he wants.
Yeah, the stat's old, but a few starts, I think it was four or five starts in into the season, he had thrown 60 pitches outside the strike zone on nothing and nothing, and yeah, batters swung at three of them. That's what it was. We're a few starts old now in the statistic, but that is a concern. If he's not fooling guys, it's hard because he's not going to overpower guys. Because again, Nola is not someone who has, you know, a 98 mile per hour fastball. It's not going to happen. I mean, I shouldn't say it's not going to happen because Charlie Morton somehow became like Nolan Ryan at some point, which was kind of weird, but it typically doesn't happen.
No, for sure. And I think, you know, he's got a decent fastball, 94, 95, but he's got to control that thing. And with Jake Arrieta, he's just such a frustrating pitcher because his ball has so much movement, but the command isn't there. It doesn't seem as though he really knows where it's going most of the time.
And it really hasn't been for a while, and that was kind of his problem before the Cubs.
Yeah.
So maybe he had that exact balance. I mean, I still think he's going to be an above-average pitcher, but I never really had any delusion that he was going to be, you know, Cy Young Arrieta with the Phillies. And really, they didn't pay him like he was going to be Cy Young Arrieta.
Yeah, $25 million a year. I think Phillies fans, and I have expected more from him for that money, but
But not 8 years.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's only a three-year deal for sure. That's the whole point.
Yeah, that 3 years is a big part of it. You don't want to be, you know, even the ones that look good, like Felix Hernandez, by the end of it, sometimes don't look nice.
For sure. So, you know, as we look at the Phillies offense, we look at the starting rotation, and the bullpen obviously is missing a lot of key guys right now. David Robertson not being in the back of the bullpen has really hurt this team, and Sir Anthony Dominguez has not been what we saw from him in his first month and a half last year. So the bullpen has been okay this year, but certainly not great. It looks as though the Phillies are going to be active at the trade deadline because they are all in for this season and the next couple of seasons. Which arms do you see that are out there that you think the Phillies will make a push for and should make a push for?
I really think that they should push for Kimbrel after the draft because what they have is money, and what Craig Kimbrel is going to want is money. It's a pretty good matchup, because if you have money to spend, and the Phillies still do, then, you know, the world's your oyster. You can add things that, like, the Braves won't add. The Braves don't want to spend that money. And I don't think it's going to take, you know, I don't think Kimbrel's looking for a super long-term contract. I think that he's going to look for something, you know, something reasonably priced that he can, you know, earn several million dollars and re-enter the market this offseason. I really would like, I think he's literally still the best bullpen arm available. So why settle for less?
Sure, and if you're going to make a trade for somebody, if you're going to make a trade for a starting pitcher, does Dallas Keuchel make more sense than trading for somebody like Madison Bumgarner? Or at this point, Keuchel being out so long worries me a little bit more than, say, going after Kimbrel would, because you only need one or two innings a night from Kimbrel as opposed to Keuchel. You want to have a starting pitcher that you'd think can get you into the seventh inning on most nights.
I think what's kind of tricky in the trade market this year is that most of the teams that were rebuilding already shed most of their starters that they intend to. There's still the Blue Jays. There's still, you know, Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez. That's still, you know, kind of in flux. But the Orioles, they already traded, you know, Kevin Gausman last year, and he's someone that I thought would be big at the trade deadline this year. I didn't expect them to trade him when they did. And Bumgarner, I don't think the Giants are at that point yet where they're psychologically believing that they need to rebuild. I think they, you know, I think the front office knows it, but getting ownership and organization from top to bottom into that, I don't know if they're there yet. I think they still are trying to get a lot for Bumgarner. And when the choice is Keuchel or Bumgarner, it's hard to, especially after the draft, not go for Keuchel, because Keuchel just costs money. Bumgarner costs money in prospects. And, you know, the Phillies have traded some prospects, and so it'd be nice to hang on to as many as you can, because they are reinforcements, and sometimes you need those reinforcements. You look at the Cubs, they've given up a lot of value in prospects, and now they have less to deal with, and they have less to do in an emergency. So when they're not spending money, it's very hard to upgrade that team at this point. And the Phillies, you know, they're very early in that so-called success cycle, the fun part of it. So I don't know if they want to start trading prospects that they don't necessarily have to yet.
So we just watched Christian Yelich abuse the Phillies in this series. Who's better right
now? Well, he's abusing everyone.
Well, that was my question, is who's better right now, Cody Bellinger or Christian Yelich? Because I live in the Northern Virginia area. I watched a lot of the Nationals-Dodgers series last weekend and saw a lot of Cody Bellinger, and just watched Christian Yelich torch the Phillies. I mean, I've seen both guys up close now the last week or so, and it's a coin flip for me. Who do you have right now as the better player?
Oh, that's such an unfair question. I think I'm going to say Cody Bellinger, just because of his age and his upside remaining, because he's a fascinating player in that, I mean, he came up very quickly and had instant success. I mean, he had 39 home runs in his rookie season. But what I really get excited about Bellinger is that he does things that no one really expected him to do when he was in the minors. I mean, they expected him to slug. Nobody expected him to be able to credibly fake center field as he did for half of last year. Nobody expected him to become a high average hitter. And no, he's not going to finish the season at 400. But, I mean, he had a 2-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio each of his first 2 years. Now that went straight to 1-to-1. He's more of a contact hitter and as much of it without sacrificing any of the power. And I was looking from StatCast a while ago when they had the sprint speeds, and he was way up there, and nobody saw him, and really nobody looks at him. He's like 6'4", 6'5". Nobody expects him to be a fast player, but his sprint numbers were way up there. And I'm always fascinated by the ceiling of guys like that who just continually thwart expectations. Now, Yelich, of course, does that too, but he also doesn't have quite as much time left to grow anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, Yelich, obviously, I thought we were going to see, and this shows how much I know, I thought we might see a regression from Yelich this year, because last year was so much better than his previous seasons. It turns out I was a stone-cold idiot on that one, Dan.
Yeah, well, I was looking good on Yelich for a while, because before 2018, I wrote in my breakout piece for ESPN, I put Yelich number one, because I always thought he had that crazy MVP season in there. But he's even better than I expected, so now I can't take credit for knowing that. So it's like, well, thanks. It's like Trout again.
I'll give you credit for it, man. That's not bad. I mean, number one.
Yeah, but I don't get full credit, because, I mean, Mike Trout's rookie season. Zips projected him to have a 4-win season his rookie season. That is the most wins above replacement Zips has ever projected into a full season. So if he had just been a normal star, then, you know, I look pretty good if he has a 4-win season and he puts up a 4-win season. But when he puts up a 10-win season, it's hard to brag when I missed by 6 wins. I mean, I was off, you know, 150%.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I get that. So real quick, last couple things here. Looking around the league, looking around at all the different divisions, the National League East was perceived to be among the strongest, if not the strongest division coming into the season. I don't think it's the weakest division. I think that honor has to go to the American League Central. But where do you have the National League East as far as the strength of the divisions in baseball right now?
I still think the NL East is fairly strong. I think some of the record you're seeing is that you have 4 teams that are probably, you know, in the same neighborhood as quality. I don't think I have to name which 4 of the 5 I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I think to an extent they're going to beat up on each other most of the year. You're going to see that, I think, in the NL Central as well. Mm-hmm. You can't play Miami every game.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could, that'd be pretty amazing. That would it's like an instant playoff spot. But I think that probably the NL Central is probably, I wouldn't say the best division, but they're the most even in strength. They have their worst team is better than the worst team in the other divisions.
No, for sure. Do the Reds still have a positive run differential? Last I checked, but it was about a week ago. They
still do.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they have the Pythagorean gods have not been kind to them.
No, a lot of one-run losses for Cincinnati so far here.
Yeah, but the thing about it is you don't actually get those games back. I mean, some people, you know, do all the gambler's fallacy stuff and they think that it means that it'll flip the other way. It's like, no, it's not going to flip the other way.
No.
You just expect it to work out normally going forward.
Yeah,
and you expect them to be, you know, 6 wins short, which is pretty serious when you're in a division where all 5 teams have at least a non-crazy shot at the divisional title.
No, for sure. And so as we're talking about the divisional title, last thing for you here, as we're a quarter of the way through the season, who do you project right now as the division champs in the National League East?
At this point, I think that Philadelphia has enough of an edge over Washington that it would be Philadelphia. I don't have my preseason projections in front of me, which probably would have been nice. Maybe I will filibuster while I slowly open those. Yeah, there we go. I think Zips was kinder than I would have been. Zips actually said the Nats were 6 games better than the division. I didn't really believe that, and I at least like to think I didn't believe that, because you know how time is. Because the fact that they are being poor, I might look back at my memory a little differently, but I think with the edge that they have, the Phillies are the favorite over the Nationals. I think Atlanta is still dangerous. They've struggled in some aspects, but they have enough young pitching talent that it doesn't take a lot for another guy or two to break out. They could make a trade if they want to, better than most teams can, simply because of the depth of their organization. But I think that it's going to be Phillies, then the Braves, and then the Nats and Mets very close. But this division, it could shake out literally any way except the Marlins.
Right, except the Marlins.
Except the Marlins.
I think we can all agree on that, but I think you're right. I think the trade deadline is going to be a big key. Who adds the one or two big pieces they need to get themselves over the hump? Look, folks, if you're not checking out Dan Zimborski's stuff at Fangraphs, you need to go do that and follow him on Twitter so you can see everything he's doing at D Zimborski, DSZYMBORSKI. Dan, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, up next, we'll take a look around the majors and some of the good hitters having bad seasons and some bad or some unexpectedly good seasons from hitters you may not realize were playing this well. We'll also preview the upcoming series against the Colorado Rockies. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So I know that the season that Bryce Harper is having right now is not something that we are thrilled with, to say the least. The boos have been coming out at Citizens Bank Park a little bit. And listen, Bryce knows that he's not having a good season, and it's, I think he's putting pressure on himself. I do like the fact that he's playing hard in the field. I noted this on Twitter, and I talked about it on the 94 WIP morning show on Thursday morning when I was on with Angelo and Rhea and the gang. And Ben Lindbergh did a piece for The Ringer over the winter. I think it was in the fall he wrote it, when Bryce was a free agent, talking about Bryce Harper's defense. And I'm sure many of you probably read it. And as part of that story, he did the research and noted that Rhys Hoskins last year only dove for one ball in the outfield and made four sliding attempts. He basically matched that output in this series alone, had one terrific diving catch in the game on Monday that helped win the Phillies the game, kept a game tied at four in the seventh inning. And then in back-to-back nights, he made two sliding catches in the same inning on Tuesday and had another great sliding catch in the game on Wednesday. He also helped save a run by making a strong throw home on a potential sacrifice fly play that cut down a run or that prevented a runner from tagging. He's been outstanding defensively and has been making up for his offensive shortcomings so far by playing a very good outfield. But looking at some of the other players around Major League Baseball who are struggling this season, let's just look at Manny Machado so far, who so far on the season has not had a great start. 266, 339, 475, not bad. OPS plus of 122 for him, 9 home runs on the season, 23 RBIs. He's off to a better start than Bryce Harper, no doubt about it. But that's not a phenomenal season from Manny Machado. But again, his outstanding defense at third base for the Padres is certainly going to help increase his value. But Jesus Aguilar is batting 209, 321, 322, has a negative 0.2 FWAR this season. He had a great year at first base for the Brewers last year. Joey Votto, looks like a future Hall of Fame first baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, hitting just 208 with a 325 on base and a 354 slugging percentage. He's been worth negative 0.2 FWAR. Miguel Cabrera, he's aging. He's hitting 282, 349 on base, but only a 342 slugging percentage, negative 0.1 FWAR. Juan Soto, 235 now for him, 350 on base, 429 slugging, negative 0.1 FWAR for him. Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals, 199. 323, 333 with a 0.2 FWAR. And Brandon Nimmo of the Mets, 202, 345, just a 336 slugging percentage so far this season for Brandon Nimmo. This is a talented young player who had a great season last year, off to a bad start. It happens. Some very good hitters off to a bad start here in 2019. And I'm always interested to see which players are kind of bursting onto the scene every year in the first couple months of the season. Paul DeJong is a guy who was near the top of the Fangraphs Wins Above Replacement leaderboard charts last year, and he's doing it again this year. Nobody ever talks about this guy, and he's very quietly become one of the 5 or 10 best players in baseball. Paul DeJong from the Cardinals tied for second in FWAR in all of baseball at 2.8. Tied with Christian Yelich, gang. Hunter Dozier, 1.9 FWAR for the Royals. We just got done seeing him. He's having a 312, 402, 603 season for Kansas City, bursting onto the scene. Michael Brantley, who was a free agent, Phillies could have signed him. He was the guy that I was pushing for the Phillies, the free agent outfielder not named Bryce Harper that I was pushing for them to sign. He's hitting 329, 379, 575 for the Astros with 10 home runs. And of course, I think one of the most interesting players in baseball is Joey Gallo, the first baseman, outfielder, DH for the Texas Rangers. So you talk about a three outcome guy. It's walk, strikeout, or homer for this guy, hitting 248 with a 395 on base, a 608 slugging percentage with 12 homers, a 19.7% walk rate, and a 36.3% strikeout rate. But it works for Joey Gallo. So whatever Joey's doing, he's got some flaws in his game, but he has emerged as one of baseball's true three outcome guys. He's a guy who strikes out, homers, or walks in more than 60 some odd percent of his plate appearances. So he is the face of today's game. No doubt about it. What he does, that's today's game. That's what baseball is now. All right, let's preview this upcoming series against the Colorado Rockies at Citizens Bank Park on Friday night. Game time is at 7:05. By the way, the Phillies will now embark 12 games in 12 days in which the start time is different from one day to the next. The Phillies do not play back-to-back nights with the same start time in each of the next 12 games over 12 days. Friday night, they play at 7:05. Cole Irvin will take on John Gray. John Gray, 3-4 on the season with a 4.25 ERA. Saturday afternoon, they play at 4:05. Aaron Nola with a 4.86 ERA will take on Antonio Senzatella. Senzatella, 3-2 with a 5.35 ERA. And then on Sunday afternoon, it'll be Jared Eichhoff with that ERA now 2.65, taking on left-hander Kyle Freeland, who gave the Phillies fits in Colorado. Freeland still with a high ERA of 5.68, but the Phillies do not hit left-handers well. Not only do their left-handers not do so well against lefties, JT Realmuto and Rhys Hoskins are terrible against left-handed pitching. You got to believe that's going to turn around at some point, but they struggle against left-handed pitching. Since starting the season 3-12, the Colorado Rockies have gone 17-10 on the season. So they still stand under 500 at 20-22, but they are seven games over 500 in their last 27 games. The Phillies are 16-10 against the Rockies at Citizens Bank Park going back to 2012. And over the last 10 games, the Phillies have a 6-4 record against Colorado in Philadelphia. But none of those stats are our stat of the week. This is our stat of the week for this week. This held true again here on Thursday. And this is a crazy stat. It really speaks to how once the Phillies get down in a game, they have real trouble coming back. When the Phillies lead after six innings this year, they are 21-1. When they trail after six innings, they have yet to win a game, 0-15. So one thing the Phillies need to do this season is figure out how to win a game when they trail heading into the seventh inning, 0-15 when they trail after six, 21-1 when they lead after six innings. That's the most amazing stat I've seen so far this season. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Dan Szymborski for coming on the podcast once again. And a reminder, guys, if you haven't already, please leave that five-star rating and a review at Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And again, check out the Patreon for Hittin' Season. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.